you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
This is Air Talk. I'm Austin Cross in for Larry Mantle today. Thank you so much for being with me. Coming up later this hour, we will head to Chicago in the wake of a police shooting of a 13-year-old Latino boy who appeared on a body camera footage to drop a handgun just before an officer shot him. Now, the video is so hard to watch, and it comes on the heels of another police killing, that of Dante Wright in a Minneapolis suburb. With what seems like a constant flow of these killings, often accompanied by video footage of the moment it happened, how are people of color processing these headlines and how are they taking care of their mental health? That's coming up later this hour. But first, we are joined, as we are every day, by a noted local infectious disease expert to help us sift through the latest COVID-19 headlines, research, and science. With me today is Dr. Shruti Gohil, Professor of Medicine and Associate Medical Director for Epidemiology and Infection Prevention at UC Irvine's School of Medicine. And if you have questions for Dr. Gohil on COVID-19, we are here for you at 866-893-5722. Again, that's 866-893-5722. We would love to hear from you. You can also post your question on the AirTalk Facebook page or tweet us at AirTalk. Dr. Gohil, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
The Washington Post reported yesterday that 38 states have said hospitalizations increased in the past week. And while those surges do seem to be mainly focused in the Northeast, the Great Lakes, and the Mountain West, are you concerned, Doctor, that California could see a rise in cases as well?
Yeah, it's always humbling to see how these things spread. And I will say, not surprising to those of us in the field, and certainly not surprising after you look at some of what's been happening in Europe, Paris, Italy, and the UK, no less. So we know, a lot of what we're going through right now is not news. We know that as long as that virus is circulating and has an opportunity to pass between people, it will take that opportunity. It's a race against time to sort of vaccinate and get the prevalence down low enough through behavioral changes that you end up in a situation where you can really control things. We are watching carefully here in Southern California.
You know, just watching the way that people interact online and the things that they post, I've noticed a few things. I mean, one of them is that people are feeling a little bit more optimistic these days. There certainly seems to be a lot less doom and gloom than there was at the height of the pandemic last year. But on the other hand, there seems to be a little bit of a separation between how people are feeling and the reality is that COVID-19 is still very much alive and well. Are you seeing that too?
Yeah, that dichotomy is so it's so understandable, honestly. You know, we've been at this for a year plus, and it's a long time to ask an entire society and community and world to maintain this sort of high specter of concern. And certainly with a vaccine coming through, boy, is that a big ray of hope. And and we should feel good about that, right? We should feel good about that. But what we shouldn't do is forget the things that we learned over the last year. Gee, masks work, social distancing works. So you haven't been unvaccinated, please continue those precautions and protect everybody by doing that. You know, and then, yeah, you can move on with life within the protective mechanisms that you take, considering your prevalence. If you're not in full shutdown mode, you happen not to be to a place like the Midwest right now, for example. But we're in California. It looks like the rates have come down. Keep going with the public health advice and get your vaccine. And 2 weeks later, you should be even more protected. And so we carry on with new information. I think that's the best way I could put it.
My producer, Natalie, makes a good point that there's also just the sense of senioritis. I'm really seeing the senioritis in a lot of people because people are just feeling so done with these precautions and these restrictions and this way of life change. And the summer is coming. So, of course, you're getting a little bit of the summer excitement, too. That's on the horizon. As always, if you have questions for Dr. Gohill on COVID-19, we are here for you. We would love to hear from you. 866-893-5722. Again, that's 866-893-5722. You can also post your question on the AirTalk Facebook page or tweet us at AirTalk. Doctor, on a more personal note, how are you and your colleagues holding up these days? I know that you and Larry have talked a lot early on, especially through the thick of the pandemic, about burning out and burnout among other healthcare workers. Do you see that sense of burnout continuing, or has the rising number of vaccinations given you and your colleagues some hope?
Definitely a boost. Definitely. You know, it was noticeable. I mean, after the vaccine was rolled out at our facility and many others that we know about that, experienced the same thing, that, you know, our healthcare workers, just there's a layer of intensity and you just feel it walking through the hospital that you just, people felt better about the work they were doing and needing to do. And what was really important for us, and I think that our facility has really risen to that, which is maintain the high standards, still maintain the masking and the social distancing. And we had to really make sure that we got that message across, because it's very easy to think that you have license. Of course, a healthcare setting is very different from the community, and we deal with patients, and, you know, even if 5%, 95% efficacy for the Pfizer Moderna, for example, that 5% is not a risk we can take with our patients. So certainly different environment. But we're doing better, may I say. Yeah.
Well, doctor, you mentioned that 5%, so that almost provides the perfect segue for my next question, because the CDC recently identified a small group. It's about 5,800 cases of COVID-19 in the more than 66 million Americans that have been fully vaccinated. So on Wednesday, LA County Public Health Director Barbara Ferrer, she also confirmed that there are about 12 such cases in LA County. What can you tell us about, they're calling them breakthrough cases. What can you tell us about that?
Wonderful. First and foremost, when an epidemiologist looks at those numbers, we think, oh, gee, you know, what was reported in the trials was 4 or 5%. This is amazing. 0.008% is what the 5,800 cases amongst 66 million vaccinated is the breakthrough. 0.008%. Let that sink in a little bit, because take flu, take other vaccines. Flu vaccine efficacy may range 40 to 60%, though the risk of hospitalization and death from flu vaccine is markedly reduced. Similarly here with COVID vaccine. So this is astonishingly, amazingly successful vaccination. First and foremost. Now, amongst those that do have breakthrough, there are a variety of reasons for it. People who have a suppressed immune system, who can't really mount a response when we give vaccines. Those are the people who we expect that might break through. That is what we are experiencing. When we do see a breakthrough infection, we look carefully. And it's either one of two things. Either the person's innate immune capabilities are lower than would be expected. So they're a risk individual. The other is you are somebody who has taken license or somehow didn't know, and you had a really solid exposure from a close household or somebody else within your orbit who was unvaccinated and infected, and they overrode whatever protection you had. The other major breakthrough infection type of scenario we have seen are those people who are not fully vaccinated. They got their first dose and they're not fully protected, and then they get exposed, or they get their second or the full series and they're within 2 weeks. They're still in that little period where they haven't quite mounted the full protective response, and so we see that. With all of that caveat in place, I mean, no vaccine is 100%, but what's really critical to understand, and that includes about the variants too, some of the, even if the efficacy is, say as published at 95% and not like 99.00, even in that scenario, you see that hospitalization and death risk is incredibly reduced with the vaccine. So, all good.
Yeah, all good. Well, I mean, it's so interesting to me because I have this personal belief that if there are more than three steps to any process, you're going to start to see a drop off of people following those steps and those rules just because it's a lot to keep in mind. And it sounds like sometimes, you know, you might have a person who got their second vaccine, but they're not waiting for it to take the full effect. They get it and they think, oh, I'm out there, I'm home free, you know, I'm good to go. And that's why the information that we get from people like you is super, super important. So hopefully the listeners will hear that and they'll pass it on to their friends so that they know some of the steps that they can do to really optimize the results of that vaccine. My guest right now is Dr. Shruti Gohil, Professor of Medicine and Associate Medical Director for Epidemiology and Infection Prevention at UC Irvine's School of Medicine. And Doctor, we have a question from Ron in Irvine. He says, we have two people coming from out of the country who are going to stay with us and have not been vaccinated. Now, they are quarantining for 14 days. We have both been fully vaxxed. How restricted are we during their quarantine, and can we see them in that time?
Ooh, really depends where those individuals are coming from, like what country they're coming from and what the local spread is within the communities that that person is coming from. Let's assume, we hope they're not coming from a very high prevalence, you know, location.
Sure.
And if that were the case, suppose, and the persons who, so the host, individuals are vaccinated and there's no underlying immunocompromise in the people who have been vaccinated, and no other reason to think that the vaccine would not have worked in them. And then the people who are coming in from the outside, if those individuals are themselves also healthy and not people who are immunocompromised and likely to, say, have symptoms and then not manifest them, for example, then theoretically it should be okay to visit each other during the quarantine period, but I would still maintain the masking within the quarantine period. I would definitely maintain masking on two ways and the social distancing. I think what happens is we always want to break bread. That's a human social thing to do.
Yeah.
And so when we want to eat, the mask is going to come up and, you know, just do that 6 feet apart outdoors and maintain good hygiene. And that should be a reasonable thing to do. I would not mix and mingle within a household indoors or something like that within the two-week quarantine period. Post-quarantine period, I think it's very reasonable to go ahead and, you know, be able to be with each other. I think that the difficulty here is how good that quarantine period is. So do we take risks within that quarantine period where we're going outside and, you know, acquiring new exposure risks? So that's going to be the key element, I think, in that situation.
That was a question for Ron and Irvine. Ron, I hope that helps you out a little bit. We have another question, Doctor, from Stacy in Eagle Rock, and she says, in 2 weeks, I will be fully vaccinated with Moderna. I do makeup and hair for a living, and I'm worried about doing makeup because the person I do it on will be maskless. Can I safely go back to doing makeup as a fully vaxxed person? That's an important question because this is her livelihood we're talking about here.
Yeah, very important question. So, and of course, that person will be maskless and then you're in close proximity. Depends on the person's underlying risk factor. So if you told me that this person, you know, if she is herself somehow immunocompromised or somehow at higher risk, asthma, some such, you know, would I take every precaution? Sure, I would. And I would, that would include wearing your mask. You're vaccinated, but wear your mask. And I think that's perfectly all right to do. I don't think that gets in the way of any kind of, you know, it's the most protective thing that you could do. And we're still in universal mask mode anyway. So I think it's perfectly all right. You're vaccinated. This is your livelihood. At some point, you know, a lot of what we're talking about today, we are doing, and, you know, we've heard this term, an abundance of caution. And it's the right thing to do when you're in a setting of a pandemic and the entire public is vulnerable and you have no immunity, you have no vaccine on the horizon. That's the correct thing to do, is to be in an abundance of caution mode, depending on the question at hand and the risk benefit. But, you know, at some point we are going to have to think about how do we de-escalate and you know, thoughtfully tear down, scale down our what we scaled up over the past year. And this is one of those questions where, okay, we've got a healthy, suppose it's a healthy vaccinated individual. This is your livelihood. Move forward. Just protect yourself.
I mean, one of the big themes from this whole year of pandemic has just been about the value of compounding things between you and COVID, whether it's you wearing a mask and another person wearing a mask and putting the distance between you and being outside. And no one of these things is the miracle fix by any means, but putting them all together can at least help make you a little bit safer. And what I'm hearing from you right now is even after you have your vaccine, a great way to add that extra layer of protection is to keep the mask going on. You know, I mean, a lot of people are in a hurry to get rid of their masks. I mean, I am among the people who want to get rid of those masks so bad. But there's a real value to keeping the mask going even after you get your shots, doctor.
That's right. And applying common sense. You know, when this thing first started, we all had our own moments of, you know, stages in which we accepted or changes in the way that we were going to behave, you know, whether you're a community member or a physician or someone in healthcare epi like me, where, you know, we saw our own opinions and ideas change as the pandemic evolved. And so that, you know, the reason to mention it is because no one thing fits, you know, any given circumstance, and the application of common sense cannot be underestimated. And so when faced with a question, you know, the one question that comes in from our makeup artists, you know, is quite relevant to so many other individuals to translate that information that, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you have somebody healthy, you're worried about it. Hey, just slap on that mask, and that other person's not going to wear a mask. And guess what? You're going to be in front of that person in close proximity. They're going to be breathing, and I'm willing to bet more than 15 minutes to do makeup. And so if that's the case, that's the exposure definition, 15 minutes of continued contact. And so you apply the common sense. Why not wear it? What's the risk in wearing the mask for now?
What is the risk? With me today is Dr. Shruti Gohil, Professor of Medicine and Associate Medical Director for Epidemiology and Infection Prevention at UC Irvine's School of Medicine. We are going to continue with her after a break, and we're also going to ask about something that I'm sure is a big question for a lot of people out there. It's about mixed vaccine status families. We do have a question waiting in the wings about a family where the younger person isn't vaccinated, but everybody else is, and they want to know how they can safely gather. We are going to put that question to the doctor in just a few minutes. And if you have questions for Dr. Gohil on COVID-19, we are here for you. We are here to help you out. 866-893-5722. Again, that's 866-893-5722. You can post your question also, by the by, on the AirTalk Facebook page or tweet us at AirTalk. We'll be back. Stick around. Always the good tunes here on Air Talk at 89.3 KPCC. I am Austin Cross in for Larry Mantle today. At 11 o'clock, by the way, it is Film Week, and our critics review this week's new releases, including the comedy We Broke Up and the drama Rifa, based on the true story of Israel Rifa Hernandez Jr., an 18-year-old Colombian immigrant and art prodigy. But right now, we're talking about the latest COVID-19 headlines and research with Dr. Shruti Gohil, Professor of Medicine and Associate Medical Director for Epidemiology and Infection Prevention at UC Irvine's School of Medicine. And if you have questions about COVID-19 or the vaccine, we'd love to hear them. 866-893-5722. Again, that's 866-893-5722. We have a question, doctor, from Emily in Burbank, and she says, a friend of mine has a family reunion at a rental house this year. Nice, nice. All adults are fully vaccinated, but their 14-year-old son isn't. And she's wondering if her son can go maskless when around those fully vaxxed adults, and if the doctor maybe has other advice to keep her son safe during this trip. And I think that this is a question that we've gotten some version of several times over the past few days, because people are really wondering about this, especially with young people. I have a feeling that the answer might include masking, but doctor, tell us what you think.
Yeah, it's so hard because every family circumstance, depending on the number of the people attending the reunion, the kind of location it's going to be, and the kind of activities that are going to happen, you have to sort of put all the vectors together and kind of come up with your own, sort of risk assessment, theoretically, right? But in general, the way that the CDC is putting this forward is really nice. If people haven't had a chance to go to the CDC website and check out the interim guidelines for vaccinated individuals and what you can and cannot do. It's a really nice website, good guidance. So, if technically speaking, the current recommendation is that if your kids aren't vaccinated, they really shouldn't be mingling indoors and maskless with unvaccinated individuals. That's the general dictum. It sounds like in this circumstance, everybody that the person would be, with would be sort of vaccinated. Then the question becomes, is there any risk that the vaccinated, that amongst the vaccinees, that there could be a breakthrough, that somebody's older and doesn't have the best immune system or has some other condition like cancer on chemotherapy or something like that would mitigate the risk. And so for this particular circumstance, depending on the number of individuals, what's the safe thing to do is to wear a mask when you're inside the house when you can and when you eat, exercise caution. Maybe you don't want to sit right next to everybody else or some such. And that's an extreme sort of recommendation in some ways because these vaccinations seem so incredibly effective, honestly. It's just that we don't know where, this younger group, age 14, depending on their exposures, may not manifest symptoms, and then on top of that, have their own kind of activities that they do that might put them at risk. We are seeing, for example, in some schools, some cases, a little bit more than we had earlier on. So it's not totally gone from that group. Not sure I answered the question, but
I think you did. I hope that helps out, Emily in Burbank. It does sound in many ways like it is a case by case sort of situation, depending on the individual health of the people that, they'll be around. If you have questions for Dr. Gohill on COVID-19, we are at 866-893-5722. Again, that's 866-893-5722. You can also post your question on the AirTalk Facebook page or tweet us at AirTalk. Doctor, I want to ask you about some of this latest research. It's coming out of the UC Davis Genome Center, and they've identified a more contagious strain of the coronavirus, a more contagious variant, in a person in Yolo County. And that's the third variant that has been identified in that area. What do we know about that variant right now, Doctor? And is it cause for concern here in Southern California?
Yeah, this particular variant is more contagious, and it's the third. It was previous strains included ones that had homology with UK strain and the South African strain, and now this is the Brazil strain found there. Not surprising in some sense, right? We know that these are we know the UK strain, for example, was found in Southern California and in other places. So, but this particular one, yes, was more contagious. It is the one that was prevalent in Latin America when Johnson and Johnson rolled out their vaccine and got an efficacy rate of 66%, for example. So people always wonder whether or not that affected the efficacy. But yeah, definitely another sort of footnote as to why we need to continue these what seem strange recommendations post-vaccination. We get the flu vaccine. How can we have to mask after the flu vaccine? Well, this is a scenario in which these types of variants will come up. And so until we are really at a place where even the variants are stomped down, we have to continue these measures. That's the point. Point number one. The second thing I would say about that is that we should take some good feelings from the fact that Pfizer and Moderna vaccines were found to be pretty robustly effective against this particular strain. So that's good news. And so get vaccinated. I think that's what I can say about that. And that should help.
Just to be clear, doctor, it's more contagious, but is it more deadly?
Ah, this particular one appears to be more contagious and not as deadly, say, as the UK variant. UK variant was more more severe in its consequence. So there were reports of severity. What I'm not convinced by is that this particular strain occurred in places where the underlying infrastructure for medical care was compromised or you know, not as good as it is here. And so the issue of severity, and people were running out of oxygen, and basic care was difficult. And so it's hard to say about the severity of this particular strain, in my view.
You mentioned Pfizer earlier, Doctor, and it's a good time to mention that Pfizer CEO Albert Bourla, he said earlier this month that he expects that a third dose of his company's COVID vaccine will probably be needed within a year of the second dose. And we've also heard something similar from Johnson & Johnson's CEO saying that it's likely that people might need to be vaccinated annually. And I know that this is still being researched, but can you remind us what we know as of right now about the longevity of the vaccine and whether we can expect this to become an annual vaccination like the flu shot? Because part of me is thinking if there are other variants that are coming out there right now, it sounds like we're always just going to try to be one step ahead of this virus. Is it looking like that?
Yeah, absolutely is looking like that. A recent study published in just a week or two ago showed that the Pfizer, the mRNA vaccine, Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, antibodies generated through those last up to 6 months. So this is really great. We're all waiting for this duration of the antibody. And there are two ways to measure the immune response. One is through these antibodies, the test that we can test in blood. And the other is a whole system of the immune system called the T cells, which are there, active, ready, and memorizing all of the work, the antibody production, and we can't measure that in blood right now. We don't have a test for that. So many of us know and think that protection, even if the antibody rate of decay of the antibody in your bloodstream may go down, you have this whole other arm of the immune system there, ready to activate as well. So with both of that, those pieces of information in place, we know that we're starting to see a decline. We're not starting to see a decline at 6 months, but we anticipate with the rate of decline in the antibody, what we can measure will probably take us through 12 months. And I absolutely agree that that's probably going to be an annual thing. And then maybe a little refresher with a booster with addressing new variants coming along for annually. Yes.
You know, yet another common theme that I've noticed throughout this pandemic is when it started, it seemed like we were a little bit in the dark, or a lot in the dark, I should say. We were definitely in the dark. We were poking around there. But over the months, you know, researchers got more of a handle on what we were looking at. And, you know, suddenly what we didn't know one day, we had more answers on the next week. And from some of your answers, I've certainly heard that there is a limit to what we know right now about how the vaccines operate and how long they will last with us and even how this virus operates. But I also look at the growth that we've had over the past year and how much we have learned. As a doctor, as a medical professional yourself, when you look to maybe next year, because it's clear that this virus is going to be part of our lives for a while. When you look to our next year, though, how are you feeling about maybe what more we will know in the coming weeks, months, years that can help us get a better handle on this virus?
Oh, I love that question, because let's start with the background that influenza, H1N1, when that pandemic came along, the swine flu, so-called, that flu strain replaced the normal flu strain for 5 years. After it was introduced. So yes, absolutely. For COVID, you know, if we don't get, you know, I don't know if we've missed the boat yet or not, but for what it's looking like right now, it's probably going to hang out. And yes, it's kind of going to be an annual thing. And we hope that, you know, it's a matter of time before, you know, something else kind of replaces the milieu of, you know, viruses out there that can get you, right? So regular cold viruses and whatever. So eventually we hope that it'll peter out, you know. What can we learn? Will the scene be different? Boy, there's so much difference now between what things look like in the beginning times. We have now, you know, a multitude of tests. We've learned so much, not just as a healthcare system, but as a community, on how we can mitigate spread and how we can diagnose and get people moving in the hospital and So I anticipate that just like the flu, you know, our systems are ready, we're charged, we're primed. We know everything from vaccination testing, but also treatment. There are treatment modalities and supportive care learning that has happened over the last year. So you would anticipate that with the coming years, we'd get better and better as a learning system. Maybe it's worth saying one more thing, which is that in medicine, you know, one of the reasons I love infectious disease, but medicine in particular, this is what we do every day. We choose medicine because we learn something literally every hour. And so it's nice to have the public walk with us on this, right? This is what you're seeing in real time unfolding is the world of what we do every day.
I mean, hearing that from you, honestly, it gives us hope. And I think hope has been one of the things that has sustained many people through this rather difficult chapter. I call on one of my favorite movies, Shawshank Redemption, and the quote, "Hope is a good thing, maybe the best of things." And in this situation, it just might be. Doctor, in just kind of the last few minutes that we have with you here today, I have another question from Andrea in Venice. She says, "My father had a type of blood cancer and is now immunocompromised. Now, there was an article in the New York Times about how people like that might not launch an immune response to the vaccine. So what does the latest research tell us on this? Is there research on this, Doctor?"
We're still waiting with bated breath, I'll say, for this group of the really immunocompromised individuals. As of now, we are not willing to take down any type of safety mechanisms, even if, you know, we move full court press ahead with vaccination in at UCI for immunocompromised individuals, depending on the case. But we do recommend it. The issue is whether or not you're going to mount the response, just like the caller said. And so while on the one hand, we give the vaccine, on the other hand, we say, don't change anything. Keep the mask on, keep the distancing. We're so sorry, but this is too high stakes for you. And we have to just continue all of the usual practices with the hope that we've done the maximum in protecting.
There are so many questions about the virus and the vaccine that we have, that listeners have. We always just have such limited time with the experts, but it's a good thing that we bring them back here very often. Dr. Shruti Gohil of UC Irvine, thank you so much for joining us today and for being part of our rotating panel of infectious disease experts. We so appreciate the information that you provide us every time you come on the program. And I've heard you personally on a personal level, I've heard you on Air Talk with Larry Mantle many times, and it's always just such a joy to hear you. So thank you so much for all that you do.
Too kind. Take care of yourself.
That's Dr. Shruti Gohil, Professor of Medicine and Associate Medical Director for Epidemiology and Infection Prevention at UC Irvine's School of Medicine. Stick around, if you please. We're going to talk about mental health after unarmed police shootings, especially in communities of color. There's more Air Talk just ahead, right after this.
The LAS Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at las.com/sweeps.